Welcome into the week 11 edition of the install with Greg Cosell of NFL Films. That's obviously Greg. I'm Buck Rising. We're happy to be back for another edition. Greg, they don't do it pretty. The Titans keep on winning. And at this point, I guess that's all that matters. You don't get there's no additional points for style, but at this point, they're just plugging along.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, they're a team right now. Isn't it crazy to say this after last year, Buck, that they're a team driven by their defense? Very much so, because it's obviously crazy. Since the loss of Henry, they've not been able to run the ball. They're not creating any explosive plays, which, by the way, they've had trouble doing that all year, really, creating explosive pass plays. It'll be interesting to see if in any game, and as we've seen throughout the league, Buck, I know their schedule isn't necessarily tough. I know they have New England, you know, coming up. But when you have a particular weakness or deficiency, whatever word you want to use, it can come and bite you in any given game. So I'm very anxious to see how this continues, because they're going to need to be more productive on offense, I think, to get where they'd like to go.
Oh, sure. And that's something that Taylor Lewan told us after the game. He said, we're very beatable at this point. And everybody is very beatable, because the Titans aren't the only ones banged up. Their opponent missing their starting quarterback, their starting running back, their starting left tackle. It's a war of attrition at this point in the season. But I guess let's start with those lack of explosive plays, Greg, because obviously they had the 50-yard catch and run with Marcus Johnson.
Yep.
And they had the 39-yard screen pass to the boundary side with Deontay Foreman. Other than that, they didn't have anything that went for over 17 yards, and that's been the case even before Henry, as you mentioned, was out of the picture at this point. The screen game, though, seems to be the best place, the most reliable place, where they can get these explosives. And I wonder, you know, I can't imagine that's sustainable if defenses start to pick up on the fact that that's really the only way that they're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, screens can be very effective. Look, the New England Patriots are very good in the screen game. There are teams that have been very good in the screen game for years, like the Chiefs. So the screen game can be a meaningful part of your offense.
Sure.
But you need more than that. And I think one area where they've really struggled in the two games without Henry, and not that he is a factor on this particular down because he doesn't play, but there's a cumulative effect of a lot of different things. Tannehill and the Titans offense have not been very good on third down the last two games.
Right.
Tannehill is 12 for 19, but only 76 yards on third down, and only five of those 12 completions have resulted in first downs.
Yeah.
And it's not as if teams are being really aggressive. He's only been blitzed. He's had 20 dropbacks on third down in the last two games, and he's only been blitzed three times. So it's not as if teams are saying, hey, let's go after him. They've just not been very efficient. And I guarantee, because, you know Mike Vrabel, I'm sure he's thrilled with 8-2, but he's not going to be dancing in the streets. He's going to be looking at the things they need to improve, because he knows what it takes to get to and win Super Bowls. And there'll be a lot of areas on offense in particular that this team needs to improve.
Oh yeah. I mean, it was all your teammate at ESPN, Diana Rossini. She was in town for the game. She had to basically drag nice things that Mike Vrabel had to say about the win out of him before he immediately defaulted to all the things that they could do better. And it's great stories, the way that they're able to get special teams contributions and forced fumbles and, you know, the defense playing lights out. But I think in this game, Greg, and we can talk about this a little later, the pass rush was not getting the consistent kind of pressure in the second half against the Saints that they were in the first. And you saw Trevor Siemian start to have a little more success down the field. But with that third down passing game right now with Ryan Tannehill, I mean, I don't know that there's a solution necessarily when their offensive line is playing the way that it is. Taylor Lewan gave up a sack. Kendall Lamb, when he had to come in, gave up a sack.
I know. I felt really bad for Kendall Lamb. He came in for one play, and it was very Saints-like. They showed a seven-man front, and then they dropped out into cover two with just a three-man rush. But they got what they wanted, the one-on-ones on the edge. And Marcus Davenport just drove Lamb right back into Tannehill. I mean, I felt badly watching the tape because Lamb, it was just one of those plays. You know, yeah. What are you going to do? But it was the only play in which he played in the entire game.
That's a tough one to have on your resume for the week. Yeah, that's a tough look. I mean, maybe he feels a little better because Davenport did the exact same thing to Lawan right before he came out to deal with some cramping stuff. It seems that Taylor just doesn't seem to be able to physically be equipped to handle those physical bull rushing pass rushers because of, you know, he's not built like a traditional left tackle, at least from the lower body standpoint. And I think that kind of shows up pretty regularly against players like Davenport. Not that there's a ton of those dudes.
No, because the Saints, and we spoke about this last week leading up to the game, how big the Saints are across their front. Because Davenport's probably in the 6'5", 270 range.
He's a big boy.
Give or take. And his game is really speed to power. So, getting back to their offense, you're right. They had two explosive plays. The Johnson 50-yarder, which was really a nice concept on second and six. They got man coverage. They had the natural rub element with Pruitt, which got Johnson wide open on the quick slant. He caught the ball on the move. He's a pretty explosive athlete, Marcus Johnson, for a big guy. And then, of course, they had the screen later in the game to Foreman, which I guess came early in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
It was a really nicely designed misdirection screen off jet and orbit motion by Brown with the screen to Foreman opposite the fake to Brown. So, again, the Saints blitzed there, so they lost bodies. That gave the Titans blocking numbers to the boundary where the screen went. But other than that, the pass game really did not produce much at all. And Derrick Henry is out. We all know that. But the run game is not really doing very much.
Yeah, and they switched up a little bit of the carry distribution in the first week without Derrick against the Rams. Adrian Peterson got the majority of the carries, and then Deontay Foreman this game seemed to have a little bit more efficiency to him. At this point, Greg, they keep talking to us about, you know, it's easier to bring a running back in and insert him into the lineup, but I don't necessarily know how long it takes, and maybe this is an unanswerable question for, as Adrian Peterson talked to us earlier in the week about learning your blockers in front of you and allowing you to hit the hole with more confidence, with more decisiveness. I just don't know if what he is at this point in his career, but I don't think it gets discernibly better.
Well, I would say that Peterson looked pretty quick. I thought his change of direction was good. I thought he had some downhill burst. I think he's a volume runner.
Okay.
I think he gets into the flow of a game. And through two games, he is certainly not getting the kind of volume that maximizes his traits. And he may not get that kind of volume, you know, with this team. I think that Peterson, to me, and I could be wrong, maybe an offensive line coach would tell me otherwise, I always felt that Peterson was kind of an instinct runner in the sense that he didn't necessarily follow blocks the way it's exactly mapped out, that if he saw a place he wanted to get to, that he would go.
Yeah.
And I thought, again, I could be wrong, but I thought he missed a couple of opportunities in this game where the hole was kind of there, I thought, and he didn't take it. He did something else. That could also be the fact that he hasn't played in quite a while as well. But he's always been a volume runner. I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen right now with this Titans team.
And it didn't last season in Detroit with him being the backup to DeAndre Swift. On the other side of the ball, Greg, obviously the defense has been impressive. Bud Dupree plays one snap in this game and is probably going to miss some time with an abdominal injury. We don't yet know how long that may be. But from the first half, they were able to get effective pressure. They put up four. They got to the quarterback four times.
Right.
Jeffrey Simmons and Denico Autry and Harold Landry, even a little bit of Ola Adeniyi getting in there and getting some pressure. And then in the second half, it seems like I wasn't sure what was happening, whether it was just fatigue, whether the Saints offensive line was playing better, whether Sean Payton was finding ways to kind of take the pressure off of his quarterback, but they weren't getting home in the same way. Was there anything discernibly different about the way that they were being attacked?
And I think to me, you know, sacks are one of those things that when you get a lot of them, you come to expect that you're going to get a lot of them all the time. And I'm just being honest, you know, and I could have missed something, you know, I'll be the first to admit that, but I don't think that there was anything that struck me as, wow, there was a major change in what's going on here. I mean, obviously they're a four-man D-line rush team. They only, their first five-man pressure came with 1 minute remaining in the first half.
Yeah.
And they're not a five-man pressure team at this point. Who knows what the future will hold, but I actually thought, it's funny you say that, because I thought in the second half, the Titans were more multiple on third down with both their pressures and their coverages, but they didn't get home.
Yeah.
So I think they tried. And other than third down, they really did not play man coverage. They played man coverage on third down, but they did not play man coverage in the rest of the game. Really, they played a lot of cover four, some cover three. Simeon settled in the second half, and I think they knew what they were getting.
Yeah.
So again, far from it for me to tell, you know, Mike Vrabel or Shane Bowen what they should be doing, but my sense watching the tape was, I hate using the word predictable because fans listening will think, oh man, you're ripping the coaches. I think they got into a rhythm, and the rhythm's been really effective for them. And in this game, because they couldn't get home in the second half, I think the Saints were able to do some damage against coverages that they felt that they were pretty sure they were going to get.
And any coaching staff, Greg, I know how many different coaches across the league you talk to and people in this world, but any coach will tell you that they have those kind of moments where they get into that rhythm, for lack of a better term, as you said, and then they go back, they watch the tape, they correct the places where they may have looked predictable at points. That's the whole point of film study.
And every coach, Buck, has tendencies. That's right. That's the way it is. And tendencies that's not necessarily a negative term. Everything in football is based on probability and tendency. And there are times when, you know, think of it this way. When you have to coach all this stuff and the players have to be able to execute. So let's say it gets to third down. You can't run 15 different defenses on third down. You know why? Because you can't teach and coach 15 different defenses.
Right.
You know, there's only so much time in the day, so many hours in a day, and so much that players can take in, because you don't want the players thinking, you want them playing. So every offense knows, hey, it's third down. This is what we're going to get from this particular defense. Now, if you happen to get a great pass rush, hey, the coverage becomes moot. It doesn't matter. If you don't get the great pass rush and the quarterback has time to sit in the pocket and work the coverage, he can make some throws. But the Titans have been a pretty distinct defensive profile, particularly on third down over the last month or so, and it's been extremely effective. So just because they gave up some plays this week, particularly in the second half, doesn't automatically mean that they have a bad defense.
No, and I think, you know, Chris Jackson can't go from the Rams game and how well he played to the way they were clearly targeting. It's not going to be that drastic of a drop off from week to week.
Yeah, they targeted him. He had some struggles in man coverage in this game, particularly on third down. They played, as I said, a lot of cover one on third down, and Simeon was really good on third down versus cover one. So, you know, they knew they were getting it. That's kind of been their template, that when they're in dime on third down, they've been playing man coverage.
Yeah, just like we talked about last week, a defined defensive identity throughout the course of this last month plus or so. I don't have a lot of sex appeal for you this week, Greg. It's the 1-8 Houston Texans, but a divisional game.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, 1-8 are the Texans, as we talked about, a quarterback change because Tyrod Taylor is back in the lineup. They're coming off a bye, so maybe a little rest and a little extra time to prepare may give them something. But I kind of call back to when we first started this podcast, Greg, where you were talking about the roster that Nick Caserio was clearly building with Tyrod Taylor as the quarterback in mind, the running backs, kind of a Baltimore mindset based on the skill set of the players. And I'm wondering how much of that they had to get away from as soon as they had to change over the quarterback to Davis.
Yeah, Mills. And that changes everything.
Sure.
But if I could, I just want to speak to their defense for a moment, because the first part of the season, with Lovie Smith and his beautiful beard running this defense.
It's a great beard. It's a great beard,
isn't it? It's a great beard. Yeah. They played a boatload of cover two, and that percentage has gradually decreased as the season has gone on, because it became very look cover two. You go back years and years when Tony Dungy sort of brought cover two in, and it's all dependent on being able to get pressure with four. Think of it this way. Pretty much every zone, but this is particularly true of cover two, is built for the three-step timing phase and the five-step timing phase of a quarterback. Three-step drop, five-step drop. If you get beyond the five-step drop in terms of timing for the quarterback, the voids in the zones show up and the quarterback can make throws.
Right.
Okay. So zones are really built for the pass rush to get there after the five-step drop timing phase. And what happened is they were playing a lot of cover two and they couldn't rush the quarterback.
Yeah.
So their cover two was getting eaten up. Now they've dropped significantly as the season has progressed in terms of their coverage percentage with cover two. They've been playing more cover one, and I don't think they're particularly great at that either, because they don't have people. So this has been a very, this will be an interesting game for the Titans. I'm not suggesting they're going to come out and toss it all over the yard and Tannehill's going to throw for 450, but this should be a game where I believe that they can do some damage throwing the football. And I think that this is very, in some ways going to be a little bit of a litmus test for where we're going with this team as, you know, we attempt to get to the playoffs in a Super Bowl.
Right. And that's basically the conversation in both conferences right now, right? Where you see the Rams getting smacked around by the 49ers after getting dominated by the Titans, with the clear template of how to take advantage of some of the stuff that Sean McVay and Matt Stafford are doing. If you've got that kind of pass rush for almost a pure drop back passing game, it's going to be critical to kind of figure out exactly just how good they are against bad teams like the Houston Texans, teams that are trying to get their feet under them,
right,
just
right.
aren't at a point where yeah, they're I mean, able to do that.
But I mean, as we've seen in recent weeks, you have to be careful about just assuming it's a victory.
Sure.
Look what happened with the Jaguars and the Bills. Yeah. You know, things happen. And if you're struggling, and that's the point I made when we started, if you're struggling in a particular area, Buck, that can crop up in any game, in any game.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, the last thing you want, and that's what happened with the Bills, is the last thing you want is all of a sudden it's early in the fourth quarter and we're in a 13-10 game. And you know, then one play can decide the game. And, you know, you don't want to be there if you're the Titans. You want to be in a, you know, look, I don't, who knows what's going to happen. You know, I'm not a prognosticator. I'm not a predictor. But you want to be ahead in the second half and going into the fourth quarter by, you know, more than one score, ideally by more than two scores, so that one play doesn't change or dictate the outcome of the game.
Yeah, and you don't want to have to rely on your defense to score points or put you in short field positions or special teams force fumbles. You have to be able to take advantage of that on your own. I look at this, so with Tyrod Taylor, obviously.
And he can move around. See, that's the other factor he yeah. brings, by the way, that Davis Mills, who was probably – really not ready to play in the NFL yet. He only had 11 college starts. And I think he showed some good things at times. And I think there may be a sense that down the road, he could be an NFL starter.
Sure.
But he, you know, as I said, he only had 11 starts at Stanford. And that's just not a lot of starts to then step into the NFL and be expected to function with any kind of meaningful consistency.
And on a roster that's lacking all over the place at this point. So with Tyrod, I mean, I don't want to spend a ton of time on the Texans because there's clear and obvious situations that they're working through, but it was uncharacteristic of him to be as turnover prone
yeah.
in yes. this game as he was last week. And that's really the discernible difference. So with that Dolphins game, and I know that the Dolphins are giving people problems right now, just ask Lamar Jackson, but what were they doing to put him in bad positions? Or was it just a situation where, kind of like Russell Wilson, it's just about getting him back up to speed?
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is he had played extremely well through the game and a half before he got hurt early in
right.
the season. So Tyrod Taylor is going to play better. I mean, to me, he's not their problem. I think we know what Tyrod Taylor is. you know, the issue for them, to be honest, is there has been their defense.
Yeah.
That's been the issue. Look, they played with Davis Mills. They played the Patriots really close.
Yes.
They had the Patriots beaten. And that game, I'm just turning around because to look at my schedule, I mean, that game was not that long. Well, I guess it was. It was week five. But they had the Patriots beaten. So, you know, it's they're capable in any given week, but their defense has really been their Achilles heel. I would expect that Tyrod Taylor will not throw three picks. He's always been a guy, quite honestly, that's taken care of the ball. He does have movement ability. You've got to be aware of that. That changes the dynamic. That'll be talked about a lot this week, Buck, and I know you're close to the team, but that'll be talked about this week a lot, playing with discipline on defense, because you can't let him – there'll be quarterback design runs, and then there'll be his ability to scramble. And you can't let him make those big plays that keep drives alive and potentially change the game.
Right. Absolutely. Speaking of the Patriots, Greg, we don't look ahead to the next opponent too often, but I mean, Mac Jones and the Patriots might be one of the biggest stories in football this week. They're four straight wins. They've handed Cleveland as bad a loss as Cleveland Browns have had in quite some time. And there's been a lot of bad football in Cleveland Browns history. And I understand that the quarterback situation for Cleveland is something that they're working with, and that defense seems to be a week-to-week proposition at this point. But Mac Jones looks comfortable. He looks in rhythm, and he seemed like on Sunday he was getting the kind of protection that's going to allow him to excel.
Yeah, and I think you're seeing him play in much the same way we saw him play in college. He's got a great sense of timing and rhythm. He sees things fast. The ball comes out. His ball location is consistently precise. You know, for all those who believe that in order to play quarterback in the NFL now, you need to be able to run around, then you need an explanation for Mac Jones.
Yeah.
And there's just an efficiency to his game. Plus, and this is why I think team and coach is so important, Buck, because I think that Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick do such a good job with how they define throws for him so that it can come out. Now, you still have to execute it, but they're not asking him to do things that theoretically he can't do. You're not going to ask Mac Jones to tape deep drops, sit in the pocket, read the field, and then drive the ball with velocity. Yep. You're not going to ask him to do that. So the ball gets out, but he sees things right away, and he recognizes. I mean, it's recognition and processing within the timing of the play design. That's what he is. He sees it right away, and he's playing very well. Now, he won't throw. Rarely will you see, you know, 350 yards. That's not the way they play offense.
Right.
But this week, the efficiency, I believe he was 19 for 23.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I think his completion percentage is close to 70%. He's not going to throw 30 touchdowns. You know, the numbers in terms of touchdowns won't be off the charts by any means. I think he has 13. Maybe he'll end up with, you know, 23 or so. Yeah, who knows? Maybe he'll end up with 30. I don't know. There's a lot of season to go. But that's not the point. It's the way in which he plays within the context of that offense. And by the way, they run the ball pretty well.
They do. Absolutely. That again, it's been interesting to watch the way that, you know, as you're talking about, Greg, people have a tendency to just box score scout these quarterbacks by touchdown. Yeah. I don't got to tell you this. You've been doing this way longer than me, but we both know from a coaching standpoint, they just want the guy to execute the game plan that they have put in against that week's opponent. And if they're executing that way, then everything else will fall in line. And then you have a product like Mac Jones and Josh McDaniels working in concert together.
Yeah, and you hit it right on the head. You've been around coaches. That's what coaches want. I mean, I've spent a lot of years talking to coaches. You know, I've had some great conversations at the combine. And that's what you hear with coaches. They want, if you're an offensive coach, whether you're an offensive head coach or a coordinator, what do they want? They work 16, 17, 18 hours a day, and they want their offense executed the way it's put together. Now, does that happen on 100% of the plays? No, of course not. But I come back to the same point. How come Mac Jones doesn't have to run around?
Because they've set it up for him in a way that he didn't have to run around.
And he can execute it that way.
Exactly.
He has the traits to do that. So, you know, that's what I keep coming back to, you know, is Tom Brady. And again, I know people say, well, he's the best of all time. But that's not the answer. There's a process that got him there. And he was able to go through that process without having to run around. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's you don't have to run around in order to play quarterback in this league. Look, Lewis Riddick has talked about this, and I worked with Lewis Riddick for a year on the matchup show before they moved him to Monday Night Football. And, you know, we used to talk about quarterback play. And when all's said and done, you can reduce it this way. You can say, what's the goal? To throw it to the right receiver at the right time with accuracy.
Yeah.
That's the goal. Okay. And Mac Jones can do that. So another way people would say it, just saying it differently, is it's about processing and ball location. That's another way to say it. That's ultimately what quarterback is. Quarterback isn't taking the snap and just running around.
Yeah. Well, you know, I still expect when next we meet for there to be a power ranking of the quarterback position based on touchdown to interception ratio, Greg. I know deliver.
Well, yeah, and again, that's all well. Yeah. I mean, look, I'll give you an example, and without going into great detail because it probably doesn't matter to Titans fans, but Jimmy Garoppolo was 15 for 19 the other night.
I was just going to bring him up.
We know they ran the ball extremely well. Nothing wrong with that. That's part of football, by the way,
right?
Contrary to what a lot of people believe, but the running game is a part of football. Garoppolo was super efficient, but the numbers weren't off the charts. You know, if you put a list together of this week's most yards, most complete, whatever list you want to make, Garoppolo and Mac Jones are not going to be at the top of your list.
Right. I mean, Tannehill in that 2019 run with Derrick Henry running the way that he was, it didn't have to be anything crazy.
No, but the efficiency with which they executed the game plan and the offense throughout the game, that's what coaches are looking for.
Yeah. This has been a hugely efficient podcast. Greg, the matchup show is coming up, of course, this weekend. Sal Pal, Matt Bowen, what games are you guys breaking down? What are the features this week?
Yeah, we're getting into a lot of good games now.
Yeah.
Although it's funny, each week, because so many teams are in the playoff hunt, so we're going to look at Saints at Eagles, Colts at Bills, Ravens at Bears, Bengals at Raiders, Cowboys Chiefs will be our big board game. That's our full segment game. And then Packers at Vikings, which is a really interesting game because Minnesota always plays Green Bay tough in Minnesota, and they've beaten them in Minnesota. So that's a really big game, particularly with the Vikings coming off winning in LA against the Chargers.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins, I mean, you speaking of box score scouting quarterbacks, Kirk Cousins has shocked me with his efficiency this year. And maybe he shouldn't at this point in his career, but I'm looking forward to seeing all of those breakdowns this week.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Amazingly enough, we're not doing the Titans-Texans game, but you probably knew that.
You know what? You can be forgiven, Greg. I think you've got enough to do to not worry about this game, because there's been plenty of Titans coverage on the matchup show.
There's been a lot. When the team does well,
you know, Greg.
Well, you know, it's really funny, Buck, and you know me well enough to know that I don't sit around tweeting all day long. You know, that's not what I do.
That feels like a shot, Greg, because that's all I do.
Right. Well, no, it wasn't really a shot. I mean, I just don't do that. So after they won, not this week, but it was last week, I guess, against the Rams, correct?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I see on Monday so many people are tweeting about their front four.
Yes.
As if it was breaking news.
That's correct.
I think I've been talking to you about their front four for a month.
Greg, it is the most frustrating thing in the world that Titans fans watch this. They hear you talk about it, whether it's here or on 3HL on a regular basis. And somehow all I get sent is clips of people calling Jeffrey Simmons Justin Simmons. Because everybody else is just now finding out that the Titans have a good pass rush.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've been talking about it for a month with you because the tape told me that. So all of a sudden they had a national TV game against the Rams because for whatever reason, and I never understand why things work this way, for whatever reason, the Titans don't seem to be a national team unless they're playing really good football.
Yeah.
So nobody really knows about their players. Everybody knew about Derrick Henry. They always know who the quarterback is in Tannehill. But I would say that beyond that, with the exception maybe of A.J. Brown and once they got Julio. But I would say on defense, even someone like Kevin Byard, who's a great player,
right,
having an outstanding year, I would bet a lot of fans who don't follow the Titans don't really know who Kevin Byard is.
No, it's unfortunate for a team that has slowly built up to this point and
they're a really good football team. Whether they get to a Super Bowl, I mean, that's all, you know, that's down the road and who knows. And only two teams get there and one team wins. But the Titans are at that point now where we pretty much say, you know what, they're a good football team.
Yeah, I know. And the losers in all of this are the local guys, because speaking of people who tweet too much, I'm in a fight with Keyshawn Johnson on social media about the Tennessee Titans this week. I didn't have that on my Monday bingo card, but we'll save that
for
next week's podcast. Greg, always a pleasure. Enjoy the football this weekend. Thanks for making us smarter.
All right, Buck. Appreciate it. Thanks.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.